Blog Talk Radio.
Quando sono solo e sogno all'orizzonte manca le parole.
The show started, David.
Yeah, is that
Is that Groban?
No.
I give up.
Oh, you should. You should give up.
That's the blind guy.
The blind guy. That cuts good. Yeah, that's good. That's the blind guy.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Man's Voice here on this Halloween Eve. And we hope everyone is safe out there and we'll have a great evening for those of you that are passing out kids. You know, one of the things I found out that there are, oh my God, it's going to be a weird show tonight, people. you come to the right place to spend your Halloween. Anyway, I found out that there are some really strange cities in the United States that for Halloween stand out to me. For example, there's actually a city called Hell. I think it's way up north. There's a city called
Hell. No, it's not way up north.
Yes, it is.
It's in Michigan, southern Michigan.
There is another one south.
Oh,
on the north.
There?
Yes, there is. There's one.
Oh. Oh.
Also called Scary. There's a city in the United States called Deadwood, Pumpkin Center, Casper.
Yeah, I know where that. I've been there.
There's one called Spook City. I don't know where that. I mean, I know where that one is. That one's right above Arizona. There. There's also, of course, Tombstone, but we know where that one is. But there's another one that I would really not like to live in called Slaughterville. I don't know if I would like
that.
There's another one called Transylvania, but we know what that is about. There's also a city in the United States called Frankenstein. There's another city called Trick'em. Like, there are some very strange, scary Halloween cities that you would not want to live in and on Halloween here in the United States. But I thought I would just bring that out while we're getting everyone together. Well, as you can see, the panel is all geared up for Halloween tonight, so we should have a very, very good show. Well, I want to start out with asking some questions because there was this lot of comments made, and I wanted to bring it to the panel to get your comments on what you think about it. On Facebook, which is changing its name, and I know that a lot of Jewish people are not happy about Facebook's new name, but I don't want to go there right now. But anyway, there is a picture of a man laying on a sofa. And then there's a child laying in his arms, and they're both asleep. Now, the wording says that it's the man and his 15-year-old son had decided, you know, the father was taking a nap and the son took a nap and laid in his father's arms. So on Facebook, it seemed a lot of people thought that was wrong, that the father should not allow a 15-year-old kid, his son, to sleep on his chest, you know, and fall asleep. And so there were all kind of nasty comments. There were comments for both sides of the coin on Facebook when people saw this. And there was another picture of a man who was, I would say he was probably in his 30s, and he was taking a bath, and his daughter was in the bathtub with him. And I would say she's probably three. And there was all kind of comments made about that. So I wanted to get the panel's opinion on, one, how fathers, are these things that I just brought up to you wrong? or are they questionable, or what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? Let's see, what are your thoughts there, Bruce? What are your thoughts?
Well, on the first one, the man with his 16-year-old son, yeah, our culture normally doesn't see that, but that doesn't make it wrong. If it's genuine, and you don't know if this son just needed some comfort, you don't know if he has issues, you don't know what kind of relationship we have, and it doesn't have to be demented. It can be a genuine care for each other that is not doing things they shouldn't do. So I would not immediately look at that picture and say that's wrong. I would want to know, is the son have some issues where he's comforted by his dad? Did he do it after his dad fell asleep and just wanted to on his own? We don't know the circumstances. You cannot judge a picture by indicate that it's bad just by looking at a picture. I mean, we're so quick to judge now. I would also say if it was something kind of demented, then yeah, it's definitely wrong. But if it's not, who are you to judge what that is without knowing the circumstances and the facts? It's a classic example of us jumping to conclusions without knowing the facts.
You know, picture on Facebook and all the comments on Facebook, it was most of the women who thought it was very negative. And I thought that was surprising that, you know, a father showing, comfort for his son.
The nurturing aspect of things.
Yeah.
Well, there is that component, David, but it's not the only component. There's a good component too. And we seem to err on the negative component too much these days.
I think so. Don, what are your thoughts?
David, I kind of agree with Bruce. I mean, you can't judge a book by its cover. We would have to know the facts. The first thing one would think is something negative sexually, but that doesn't have to be the case. We need more information. Let me say that.
Well, let me say the picture shows they're in clothes. The man is laying on the sofa, and the son just came and laid his head on his father's chest, and they both went to sleep. So it doesn't show anything. It just shows, you know, the father and son sleeping. So nothing sexual. It didn't come up with any of those things when in the picture. So that's why I'm asking the question, because to me, there are some relationships through father and son where that would have been considered, especially if the child was special needs or something, and maybe that's something that needed,
right,
or the relationship was just that strong. I'm sorry, Don, you can continue. What about the man giving his daughter a bath in the bathtub?
I don't see anything wrong with that. Sometimes a man could be the caretaker for his entire family.
Right.
It doesn't have to be the female be the caretaker. I know some men that are raising boys and girls in their family and doing a fine job.
I agree.
I would, may I also, since I didn't comment on that, I would agree with Don on the child. And we get a little more limited, maybe that's the word to use, with fathers washing their young children, both male and female, but 3 years old, that's not out of the ordinary at all. So I agree with what Don said.
All right. Michael, are you on the air?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What are your thoughts?
I'm on the, I kind of don't agree with it a lot. First, let me start by saying I'm a liberal who believes that Facebook and all social media need to be regulated by the government. I think they've gotten too much power and way too out of control. So let me just start there. Secondly, in regards to the son, 16 in his father's lap. Now, David, as you said, if the son was a special needs child, then yes, I would absolutely agree with the picture. But if the son was the captain of the football team and was a heterosexual male, then absolutely not. I do not agree with that. I don't have a son. I raised a daughter. I didn't raise a son. But had I raised him and he was 16, I, being the heterosexual male that I am, I would have hoped he was laying in the arms of his 16-year-old girlfriend, not the arms of a grown man, father or not. So, and that's with all due respect to every community. I don't want to upset the community, especially the LGBT community. I don't want to upset them at all because I'm an ally of that community, although I'm not a member. However, that community does tend to go too far, as you see they're doing right now with Dave Chappelle and trying to get him canceled because of some jokes he said. So this is a divided issue to me on the left in this country right now, and I just happen to just disagree with the picture, just to answer your question. No, a 16-year-old boy should not be laying in his father's lap or arms if he's a heterosexual male, no.
Okay, Ron, what are your thoughts?
I'm with Don and Bruce on this one, so it's 3-1 so far. I don't really see anything wrong with it, even if the kid is heterosexual. I mean, you don't know what the circumstances are, you know, and it could be a very loving relationship, but not in a sexual way. I mean, there's all different kinds of people on this planet, so you know, who are we to judge? And as far as you know, the father with the 3-year-old girl. I don't see anything wrong with that either. I mean, I remember, you know, taking showers with my dad and my other brother, you know, at the same time. So I don't see anything at all wrong with it. The only thing that I'm curious about is why would somebody post that on Facebook? That's kind of weird.
They were posting it on Facebook. I don't know why they did, but on Facebook, people were really into it. And on Facebook, it was posted as a loving relationship between a father and son, but the people who were commenting on it didn't agree with that. A lot of them didn't. Some of them did, but mostly female.
So who posted it? The mother?
I don't know. It didn't say who posted it. It just showed up on Facebook.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird.
Right. But you know, I think in these days and times, any relationship a father and son has, or a father and daughter, or thing, I think it should be between them, and I don't think everyone should take it as a negative, because it might. It's no telling, you know, their relationship might have been just total something that happened in their lives. What if the picture was taken after one of the family members passed away or something? You know, there's too many things to say. You cannot judge this book by its cover, because relationships are all different.
And it picks away, David, at the family unit, which God knows we don't have a very, in a lot of ways, we've lost the magic of the strong family unit. And I think that's a key element in some of the struggles we're going through nationwide. Not the only one, but definitely a contributing factor. And you hear over and over and over again, particularly in the African-American minority group, not having a strong father image is important. Well, I would take that anywhere, not just a minority group, any group. If you don't have a strong family leader to serve the role he serves in a family, the children grow up with some definite deficiencies.
Right. All right.
Hey, can I add that a little bit, David, because something you said that kind of reflects my point a little bit, David. You said we don't know what was going on in the context of the picture. And, yes, I do agree. We don't know what was going on in the context. Maybe they had both just lost a loved one, and he was embracing his son. And looking at it from that angle, yes, that's fine. But from what I understand in the picture, the boy was balled up like an infant. Now, that's a total different conversation. He wasn't just embracing him over someone we just passed away. It seemed like he was embracing him as though the boy was a little baby still. So if you want to dive really deep into the context of the picture, we got to dive all the way in there and look at that picture.
Well, actually, the picture I saw was the man was laying on the sofa, probably asleep, and the son was, like, on the side with his head on his father's chest. That's all, and they were both asleep. It wasn't. No one was hugging or squeezing anybody. It was just two guys asleep. Father and son was the way the picture was posted. And I think, to me, that relationship is what the world needs now. All people need to care for our, you know, during these periods of time right now, that relationship might have kept that son alive, in my mind.
Yeah, amen.
All right, now the father is sitting there bathing the daughter. I don't see, you know, for a mom to do it with her son would have been okay because that's a woman's job. So it's a big difference, but there are a lot of men that are taking care of their families. In today's time, to see men out pushing baby carts by themselves these days, it's changed over the years, over the 10, 15 years. That was never something that you would have seen, but now it's all, you know, all over, everywhere you go, in the mall, everywhere, there are fathers who are one-on-one with their kids. And I think that's important, and I think it's something that we don't need to go back to not happening, but I think it helps to make a total family. It helps to make keep it together. But anyway, it's Halloween. Let's not go there.
David, could I add something
sure.
on that?
Sure.
The very fact that you said it's a woman's job, I know what you meant. But there's going to be someone out there and say, well, what do you mean it's a woman's job? We're hypersensitive about everything. Your intent was to say that's the traditional role. But we are so unhealthy sensitive to everything that people are saying now. Instead of concern and supporting deeds, we're attacking and analyzing words. And that's ridiculous. That's totally out of balance.
Okay. So I have a question for the panel. I'm going to go one by one, and I think I've already got the answer from Michael. But Bruce, if you were laying on the sofa and your son came and laid his head on your chest, would you push him away?
My son now is 36. Would I?
No, when he was 15.
Probably not, because from probably as long as I can remember, I've given a simple gesture to my son. When he comes over and sees me or comes to help me on something, I'm a touchy-feely. I'm a hugger. And I will give him a hug. Nothing more than that. He will stand there, to my delight, and wait for me to do that. Even now at 35 years old.
Which I think is truly important, because between myself, who know you, you and your son's relationship is a relationship that should be nationally televised, because I think it's one of the greatest relationships I've seen in fathers and sons, because you both have the same hobby.
Right, and I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And there's nothing sick or demented about a relationship like that. It's supportive. And,
not at all.
And he's the type that likes that support.
And I see you do that with his wife and his kids. So that relationship is just major to me. To see that, I've always thought in my mind, you did a great job.
Thanks.
All right. Don, if you were laying on a sofa and your 15-year-old son came and laid his head on your chest, would you push him away?
No. In fact, I salute Bruce, because I have the same spirit with my wife and children. I'm a hugger, man. I want to touch and feel and have close relationships, blood of my blood, flesh of my flesh with my people. Especially my relatives, I think that's special. I grew up in a family with a father that had a loving spirit, but his father, was very rude and violent towards him, which caused him to run away from home at the age of 14 because his father beat him, and he left Georgia and moved north. And so he didn't have that type of relationship that I'm speaking of. I can remember on occasions I would say, hey, Dad, I love you. And he would say, me too. I said, Dad, I love you. Yeah, me too. He found it hard to say, I love you, son. And I knew he loved me, but he couldn't say it. And I think what we have to do now is say it and demonstrate it. And that makes the family stronger.
I agree. Okay.
Don, can I ask you a quick follow-up? Don, why do you think that is? Is it the old macho image, or is it something deeper or more shallow? Why do you think that is, that so many guys can't show that emotion?
I think it is the machoism. I'm a man. Show that you're a man. Men don't cry. That type of stereotype and myth still exists today.
Yeah. Yeah. And
all right.
Statistics show that men cry more than women now. I found that interesting.
Wow. All right, yeah. Ron, what if you were laying on the sofa and your son came and laid his head on your chest, what would be your response?
No, I wouldn't push him away at all. And Don, I can relate to everything you said. I mean, I grew up in a family. I know that my mom and my dad loved me, but we just didn't tell each other that I love you. And I wish that it would have been different, but it wasn't. And we didn't, like, we weren't that she huggy kind of family either. But I've changed over the years, and which is kind of weird because I was brought up in a family that didn't do that. But no, I have no reservations now hugging and telling somebody straight in their eyes, I love you. And no, I wouldn't push them away.
Okay. Michael, I think we know, but what would your thoughts be if you were laying on the sofa or laying anywhere and your son came and laid his head on your chest?
Well, obviously, like I said, I didn't raise a son, so I can't really answer that question. But the answer I will give just thinking about it, I would say no, I would push him away because I don't want my 16-year-old son laying his head on my chest. I don't want him getting comfortable with the affection of a man when he's 16. I want him comfortable with the affection of a woman when he's 16. I mean, and like I said, I didn't raise a son, so maybe my answer is offbeat, but that's just how I feel. I would push him away. Yeah, I would.
So you have
Michael,
a special...
can I say something?
Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, Michael, I respect your thinking, but trust me, if a guy who's 16 and obviously the father is straight, if they're both straight and they're just showing affection, I don't think that showing affection is going to turn the 16-year-old the other way. I really don't.
Actually,
and Michael, wouldn't you ask your son? Wouldn't you ask your son? You seem like a guy. You're inquisitive. You're an intelligent guy. Wouldn't you ask your son? What is this all about? Instead of just pushing him away.
Well, let me reiterate. Like I said, I never raised a son, so it's kind of hard for me to give a solid answer on that. But I'm just answering hypothetical. If I had one, that's a good question, Bruce. I don't know. I don't know how I would handle that. It would just make me feel uncomfortable, him putting his head on my chest. It would make me feel uncomfortable initially. So I just the thought of another man's head on my chest, just thinking about it makes me feel uncomfortable. So,
well, okay. You're honest. I commend you for that.
Well, as a gentleman who actually raised sons, and I had three sons and myself in the house, if I was laying on the sofa and one of my sons came and laid his head on my chest, it would shake me in my mind, like, what is going on here? But I wouldn't push him away. But I would feel that there is something that needs to come out. Something needs to be said. There's something up.
Right.
He must not
right.
be.
Yeah.
Something's wrong in his life. So he's trying to tell me something.
I would say, okay, son, as a man, let's sit up, look me in the eye as a man and tell me what's going on here, buddy. That's how I would take it. That's how I would handle it.
Yes.
And
I'm not
going to
sit there and cuddle him and say, what's going on, son, while I'm cuddling with him. That just doesn't seem appropriate to me.
Well, what you said, though, Michael, that is appropriate, isn't it? You'd ask him, what the heck's going on? What's bothering you?
Right. Get up like a man. Look me in the eye, man to man, and let's talk about this, buddy. That's how I would want to handle my son. It just seems awkward to me to cuddle with him and say, what's going on there, buddy? That just seems awkward.
Okay, let me explain something. I don't think we're saying the son is cuddling. I think we're saying the son just came and laid his head on your chest. That he's trying to get the attention to tell you something. Cuddling is all a different thing. We're not saying
cuddling. I'm in a relationship, and my girlfriend lays her head on my chest all the time. Same thing.
We're not going there. We're not saying that. We're just saying that it would make me think that there's something that needs to be talked about, said, because he's trying to get my attention, or he's trying to say, I trust you. You know, that is, you know, anyway, let's move on. Let's go around the table and find out what everyone have. Don, things have been going on. What would you like to bring to the panel this day?
I've been living a real relaxed state, I want to say, over the past 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to have a medical procedure. I had two stents put in my heart, and which was so great because I was able to catch a tragedy or something happening that was detrimental before it happened. And I consider that a true blessing. And these are things that we as men need to be more aware of and check on our health more so now than ever. Being 70, I know that I'm blessed to even be 70 years old. And now I feel so much better. And I just had a chance to reflect on that. And I want to say to the men's voice and also men listening, tomorrow, make an appointment to see your physician and have an MRA, have a stress test, and let's die empty and live out the true purpose of what God has for you in your life, and die empty. Don't take nothing to the grave.
Wow.
Did you feel something, Donald, or was it just something you said, I need to do this?
No, my cardiologist recommended, and I have a nice relationship with him, and he said, Don, let me check your heart here. He says, Don, I'm thinking, I'm seeing something blocked in your artery here. And we need to take a look at that. And he recommended it. And that's the value of having good people in your life.
Well, and
that's great.
John,
can I share
something with you? I had years and years ago in my 50s, I have two stents. And I had a true miracle that saved my life. There's no explanation. I can relate to what you're saying. It was unbelievable, the things that happened that could have gone the other way, and they didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Bruce. And it makes you, you know, Bruce, it makes you grateful, doesn't it?
Oh, God, does it? Oh, it supercharges your gratefulness.
Yeah, the sad thing is so many, especially men, because I don't know, men just don't like going to the doctor, I think, and they just ignore getting regular health checks and all that. And I mean, I have to now because I know I have some heart issues, but, you know, had I not known that, I may have died of a heart attack and not ever even knew I had heart issues like so many people. So I'm happy for both of you that you know, at least you get another lease on life, so to speak, and hopefully a long one.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. So Michael, why don't you bring to the table something that you would like to that's been going on?
Absolutely, and thank you very much for calling on me, David. Yeah, if I could, I would just like to touch on and hear the panels, hear their thoughts on Texas and this abortion law. It seems like the Supreme Court is kind of siding with Texas right now, which means in turn it seems like the Supreme Court is probably going to overturn Roe v. Wade, which is a law that has been on the books for almost 50 years now, which, as we know, bans abortions. So I just want to hear what the panel thinks about that. Like, this thing in Texas right now is really serious. Like, the Supreme Court literally just said they're kind of going to roll with Texas and let that law go into effect, which means women cannot have an abortion after 6 weeks, which is normally when most women realize that they're pregnant. So I'm going to start with my buddy Bruce and see, Bruce, what do you think about that?
Well, my position, Michael, hasn't changed. I always put a side comment on it that the creation of another human being is not just the woman. It's the man and the woman. She is, to be crude, but not to be disrespectful, she is the incubator for that, but she provides an extremely vital role. So does he. And I think if more couples were able to, I know they split and so forth, were able to talk about this and decide together, we would have a much more satisfying answer. And I'm not necessarily I tend to side on the side of life, but the fact that so many don't work this out together, I think, is so wrong. You bring in one child in, two of you are doing it, two of you have to decide whether that's something that you two feel is inappropriate. And that's a personal decision between you and your maker, whoever that is.
So is Texas going too far?
In other words, no abortions at all. For me, a better answer would be encouraging this joint decision before you do anything. And we're a country of quick fixes. So yes or no, right now, what is it? You know, and so I don't like that either way. I think it needs to be properly thought out, but if you make me make a choice, I am pro-life. I can't hide that. I always have been.
Hey, Don, is Texas going too far?
You know, Michael, I think that's a wonderful question to ask each individual, like you're doing, and that's a question that can be individually asked. I don't know. I think a woman has more control over her body than society want to give it or give her. I know for a fact that my wife and I went through the abortion process. I think I was fresh out of high school. And we weren't really ready to take on that responsibility, so it was suggested that we abort the baby or the child, and we did. And now, in retrospect, after being older, I don't know. Maybe I did the right thing, and maybe I didn't. But I just don't know. But I do know that at the time that I was dealing with the situation, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to take on that responsibility. And I didn't have the professional help to say, Don, you can get someone to do that for you. In my culture, you have a baby, you raise the baby. You go to work and you take care of the baby. And that's the culture that I grew up in. So I wasn't ready. We did it. Would I do it today? I don't know. I don't think so. I'm going to say it like that.
What do you think, Ron? Is Texas going too far?
I think so, Michael, and it doesn't surprise me about the Supreme Court. But, you know, using what Don just said as an example, I mean, I don't think the government should have stepped in and told Don and his family, well, you know, you need to either abort or you, either way, you know, I don't think it's the government's role. So, I side with what Bruce said too. I mean, I think it's an individual thing that the couple, if there's a couple, needs to decide together. And, you know, I have personally an issue with the government saying you can or cannot do this.
All right, David, well, that was my question. Thank you, David.
You're quite welcome. All right, welcome, Darius. Nice to get you on the panel. Also, we've gone through a lot of things. But, Darius, is there anything you would like to talk to the panel about or want the panel to discuss this week?
Wow, you got me coming in hot, David.
Of course.
Now, I'm sorry I missed out on that abortion question. It sounded like one I would love to comment on, but I don't know the details of the question. I just like to say when I heard a lot of guys talking about, you know, a woman's body, I just wonder in these arguments, does anybody ever think about the voice of the unborn? Does anybody ever think about the body of the unborn child? And the fact that the unborn child doesn't have a voice and it's defenseless, and who stands up for that individual?
Darius, is Texas going too far with this legislation?
Absolutely not. I think it's right on. I do think it is a little unfair when you say the period of time, because you know some people don't even know they're pregnant, that early. But at the same token, like I said, I believe that someone has to stand up for the unborn, someone has to be a voice for the voiceless. And I think that's what this legislation is doing in Texas, and I think, you know, it's what's happening here in Georgia as well. So, no, not at all. I don't think they're going too far. The difference is if a woman has a baby that she doesn't want, she has options. If the baby doesn't have any option as far as, you know, what happens with them. So there has to be something where there's at least someone that's sticking up for the unborn child. Woman can always give the baby up for adoption. But if you abort the life of the baby, then that's it. It's over.
What if it's for medical reasons?
That right there, if it comes down to the life of the mother, then yeah, you know, I think that's a decision that the government should not play a role in. That should be between a woman and a doctor, if it's a life or death decision.
I think one of the questions that everyone can't seem to answer is, Darius, if the woman was raped and found out she's pregnant, you don't think she should have an abortion?
No, I don't think she should have an abortion. I just don't think it's the fault of the child. You know, the woman got, there are lots of people who are here because of incest, because of rape, that went on to do great things in this world. And I just believe that every child deserves a chance at life. Now, if a child is raped and it's extremely painful for the mother, then I totally understand her giving that child up for adoption or not wanting to raise that child, or if it's due to incest or something like that. Absolutely. But do we kill the child because of the sins of the father or the mother? I just can't agree with that.
All right. Ron, what are your thoughts on what you might bring to the panel?
I don't know if we're going to have enough time to talk about this one, but I heard in New York City with the firefighters and the COVID situation that there's still a large number that what they're doing now apparently is the ones that have gotten the vaccine, I guess the second vaccine or whatever, are saying that they've got COVID symptoms, so they're not showing up to work, and that's putting, according to the news, that could potentially starting tomorrow put the public at risk, because there's less response times are going to get longer, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a detrimental impact on the whole fire department system of New York. So, but, you know, the firefighters, because they were reluctant, from my understanding, to get the vaccine, and now that they're being forced, they're saying, okay, well, we got the vaccine. Now we're having COVID symptoms, so we're not going to go to work. Bruce, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting. Thanks, Ron, that you brought that up, because, you know, some people could take all the deaths that are caused by lack of response for emergency people, lack of police, as all COVID-related deaths, which is ludicrous, but you know someone's going to go there. And my point in bringing that part of it up is they should have come up with a compromise. I thought I heard one that was going to work, but evidently the mayor didn't like it or the people that represent him, and that was, We'll test once a week. We'll test as often as you want us to test. The person that they're talking to, not me personally, don't want to have the shot, can't have the shot for medical reasons, don't want it for whatever reason, but I will test. And to me, that sounded like a good compromise, at least for now, until we get things kind of settled down a bit. But this, nope, you do it my way or the highway. Well, then look over your shoulder and figure out how many people are lives are in jeopardy because of lack of critical response people that are now off the job, off the clock. That to me is a bigger gamble, don't you?
That's an interesting point. But Michael, isn't something similar going on out in L.A.?
I'm sorry, could you ask that question again for me, Ron?
Yeah, isn't something similar going on in L.A. with the firefighters, refusing to get the vaccines, and then, there's going to be a shortage of firefighters, or was that another city? I thought it was L.A.
No, that's absolutely right. I've actually followed that story a little bit. Yeah, the firefighters out here are pushing back on that. They filed a big lawsuit, the whole nine yards. Yeah, a lot of them are anti-vax, and a lot of them are, and I hate to say it, it's political. It's right versus left. A lot of Republicans, firefighters out here in California and in Los Angeles, and they are pushing back against being mandated to vaccinate. But to me, that's a weak argument because they're mandated to take other forms of vaccinations and other shots and other things they must do to become firefighters. Why are they pushing back so hard on this? I think it's just politically driven, Ron.
So you would fire them? You would get rid of them?
Absolutely. I would get rid of them, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Don, what are your thoughts?
I feel the same way as Michael. You took shots to go to school. You took shots to deal with other symptoms and supposedly disease. What makes this one so different? Because it's been politicized. It's crazy. It's ludicrous. And you would, I'm going to use the basketball player, which I think we all know. And for those of, what's his name? That
Kyrie
turned
Irving.
Down, yeah. Kyrie Irving turned down millions of dollars because he didn't want to get back tonight. Now, I mean, that is totally asinine. I wish I could see him and just talk to him and say, young man, let me ask you something. When you were getting ready to go into school, your mommy had you take shots to see if you would be alive today. And now here you are, need finances for your life and your children and your generation. Millions of dollars that you cut off the pipe stream due to your ability to be a medical doctor. And whenever you're your own doctor, I believe you have a fool for a patient. And I put a period right there.
Thank you, Don. And Darius, I'm curious. I left you for last by design. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this one.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate it. I know Don had this argument last week. I know Michael wasn't here, but, you know, I told Don already, you know, the difference between what happened when we were kids are our kids getting vaccinated for school for polio and for measles and for, you know, the pots, smallpox. The percentages of children that were affected by those diseases at that time were very high. Polio affected upwards of 40% of every child. You know, the pox, smallpox were like almost 30-some percent of every child. So, yeah, those situations called for a mandated vaccine because you had a very, very high probability of getting those diseases. Talking about COVID, especially now, they're talking about vaccinating kids as young as 5 years old. It's virtually non-existent, guys, for children. You're talking about a 0.000-something percentage of kids that age who are healthy without any morbidity getting infected. So you're going to get a vaccine, you're going to inject something in your body with something that's a less than a 1% chance of you contracting. It doesn't add up to me. So you can't compare it to polio and the pox. The other argument that I have in terms of the vaccine mandate is I don't understand why everybody is not outraged that the government or an employer can force you to inject something into your, a foreign substance into your body. As Americans, we all should be outraged about that. And then to say, oh, I will fire you if you don't, that's a power trip. Bruce just said earlier, you had people who had a compromise who were saying, look, I'll get tested every week. That's not good enough. And the reason it's not good enough is because it's not about the vaccine. It's about a power trip. You do what we tell you to do or else. And we don't want to hear about any alternative solutions. We don't care about alternative solutions. We care about you doing what we ask. And in response to Michael saying it's a political thing, I don't know if Michael knows this or not, but the per capita, blacks are the majority of the non-vaccinated, and those are not a high demographic for Donald Trump supporters. You also brought up Kyrie Irving, who is definitely not a Donald Trump supporter. Don called Kyrie Irving stupid, but I call him courageous because anybody can sit here and say, oh, I'm against this or I'm against that until their wallet is being affected. The fact that this man believes what he believes and is willing to give up millions of dollars shows that this man will stand for something and that he has the courage of his convictions. I think that's admirable. Even if you don't agree with him, even if you don't agree with what his convictions are, the fact that he's willing to take a stand and give up millions of dollars to stand by what he believes lets you know that his core beliefs are true convictions, and he's not doing it for political or for popularity purposes.
I have a question.
Hey, Darius,
for you,
I agree with you on the government mandating you to put something into your body. I'm against that as well. I think that's creepy, that's scary, and that's going too far. The government should not mandate I inject something into my body. I agree with you on that one. And I also kind of agree with the Kyrie Irving thing because one of my heroes is Ice Cube, the rapper. He's been my hero my entire life. And he just turned down $9 million to be in a movie because they said he had to get vaccinated. So he's following Kyrie Irving's stance. So I agree with you somewhat, Darius, but then again, I don't because there's certain jobs like firefighters and police officers where you're around the public all the time. So you should be vaccinated because if you're a firefighter and you got to go save an 85-year-old grandma from a fire, you want to be vaccinated because you don't want to give that to that 85-year-old grandma.
It's a very valid point, Michael, but there are alternatives like like Bruce pointed out, there are people who are saying, look, I'll get tested every week. I'll get COVID tested. And so that can be easily resolved. And that you make up a very valid point because I never considered that in terms of first responders. But that's a very valid point, but it could be very easily resolved. Just test them before every week or whatever, even if you got to test them every day. Hey, when my grandkids went to preschool, they got tested every day, not the COVID test, but they had to test their temperatures every day before they walked in the building. There are measures that you can take. This mandate is just a power-drunk society, and they want to have it their way or no way.
Hey, Darius, I have a question to ask you, this one here is going to drive it straight home to your living room. Donald Trump took the vaccine and didn't publicize it. However, he took it, and he took it because he needed it. He's in the process now of starting a social media company, and if he contacted Darius, and Darius being self-employed, a man of forward thinking, if he contacted you tomorrow and said, Darius, I like you. I'm going to pay you $1 million to work for my new social media company. $1 million a year. But you've got to take this vaccine because I'm going to have a lot of elderly, high sickly people around me, but I do want you to take this vaccine. Would you take it?
Call me Kyrie Irving, Brother Don, because I would say no. And even it's not even no so much the fact that I'm against the vaccine. It's no because I'm against anybody trying to force me to do anything that I'm not willing to do. And I'm not going to compromise my morals or my standards because you offered me $1 million. So that question is very simple for me, because that would be no different than someone say, hey, let me have your daughter, one of your daughters or your wife, and I'll pay you $5 million. The answer is hell no. So you're not going to control me with money, and you're not going to change my core convictions and beliefs with money either. So that's very simple, very easy for me to answer. But on the other thing, too, as far as Donald Trump is concerned, Donald Trump didn't take the vaccine initially because they said he didn't have to because he had already had COVID and he had the antibodies, so he didn't need to take it. But what happened is the public pressure was so much, and he probably shouldn't have caved what he did. They're like, hey, you're setting a bad example as the person who rolled out, you know, the vaccine. And you're not taking it, it's not going to look well. So he did take it, and it was public. People did know about it. He did publicize it. But that's why Donald Trump took the shots. But it had nothing to do with the fact that, he took it because he needed it. He actually didn't need it. And most people who've had it already and have got the antibodies and have taken the therapeutics that Donald Trump took really don't need the vaccine.
Really? You say that Donald Trump did not need the vaccine?
No, he didn't. His doctors told him he didn't need it. That was his first statement, that he didn't have to have it because he had developed antibodies already.
Why did he go to the hospital?
I'm sorry?
Why did he go to the hospital? He could have went to a doctor.
He went to the hospital he went to the hospital because he had COVID. Are you talking about afterwards?
I'm talking about through the whole process. Why in the hell did he go to the hospital?
Because he had COVID.
And then he took the shot and then took a ride and got out, right?
After he had COVID, he received the therapeutics at the hospital, okay? And once he did that, his body developed a natural immunity. So therefore, he didn't have to have a vaccine because he had natural immunity. His doctor said you don't really have to take the shot. But because he rolled out the campaign for the vaccine, it was not a good – it wasn't good optics for him not to take it. So that's why he took the vaccine.
So if he took it, Darius, because of the optics and all that, why are there still so many Republicans hanging on to the political reasons for not taking it?
Hey, very good question, Ron. I'm glad you said that because – what this does is this flies in the face of the argument that it's a conservative or political situation. It's not, because if that were the case, those people would follow Donald Trump. If all those people that you guys are talking about are conservative sheep, they would follow their leader. but it's not political. That's what a lot of people don't understand, especially the left. You guys keep trying to say this is a conservative choice, and it's not. There are people across all types of demographics that are refusing this because it's a personal choice. It has nothing to do with politics.
But if you look at the states that are least vaccinated, they're Republican.
It may be that way statewide, but I'm telling you it's not because they're Donald Trump supporters is what I'm telling you. You may have more conservatives that aren't taking it as opposed to more liberals, but the point being is there are people across the demographic scape that aren't taking the vaccine because of personal choices. I know a lot of black people in the black community that are not taking it. A lot of them have crazy reasons why they're not taking it, but I can guarantee you none of them are Donald Trump supporters. None of them are conservatives.
All right. Well, let's move on. We got about 3 minutes left in the show, and I have a question for the panel. In Washington, D.C. recently, not Washington, D.C., I'm sorry, Tacoma, Washington, a company, GEO, got sued by prisoners because they were being paid a dollar an hour to do the work that they were told to do. So the courts in Tacoma, Washington said that was against the law. That was against the minimum wage law for the state. As such, now they're being sued for $17.3 million to pay the prisoners who did the work because they need to pay them minimum wage. What are your thoughts, panelists? Do you think that prisoners in jail should be paid state's minimum wage to do work while they're in prison? What are your thoughts, Bruce?
Well, there's a number of cases where they shouldn't be paid at all. They're in prison for a valid reason. The ones that are not in prison for a valid reason, that's a whole different case. And the courts and everybody else involved fighting for their freedom need to fight that fight. But the ones that are proven to be there for a reason, it's imprisonment because of what they did or what they've done. And, to debate about what kind of wage they're getting, I'd much rather have the debate be, instead of minimum wage or not, is get them the help they need so when they get out of prison, they can be as best as possible a well-adjusted asset to the community. That not only helps the community, that helps themselves, that helps them be a better person when they're out of prison. So, you know, this discussion about whether they get a minimum wage or not, I don't see where that has a real strong argument. Sorry.
Hey, Bruce, so well, if you get punished for a crime, you should have to give up free labor? I don't agree with that. You should be forced to do free labor because you're getting punished for a crime. That's asinine, Bruce. That sounds like a
What's also asinine is the fact that these people aren't getting help. So if the trade-off is we're going to get you the professional help, the training, the skills, and so forth, that has value, and you're going to get that training in prison. That's just like me paying for my education to get the skill sets I want. So, you know, it doesn't have to be the passing of a dollar bill, Michael. It has to be a value given to help them advance their person and become productive people once again. What's wrong with that? Why does it have to – a dollar bill does not do that.
Bruce, you sound like a Jim Crow throwback. That's what you sound like. You're asking these people to be slaves. You're asking for cheap and free labor.
No, there you go again, Michael. There you go again. There you go. Just like
they're wrongly convicted of crimes who tend to be people of color, you want them to be slaves again. That whole system is a relic of Jim Crow, and no, you should not have inmates
working for you.
You are totally misreading what I said, and you're angry.
Happy Halloween. Wow. Happy Halloween, everyone that's listening. We'll be back next week.
Wow.
Of course, a Halloween show. This was the Halloween show. We'll come. We'll see you here again next
Make
week.
Believe. Make soon. Believe.
There you go. You guys have a great
Where's
week.
Where's the love, gentlemen? Where's the love?
Where's the love?
Show in America.
Where's the love?
Bruce, you can turn your lights
Where's
on.
Where's the love, Michael? Don't be angry. Be mellow.